I would like to welcome you to our Monday seminar. Today we will pass over or beyond sentence, so to say, to discourse structure, and we will listen to Šárka Zikánová from UFAL, what she can say about the implicit relations for text coherence. And I'm very happy to see that she will give us also some information on psychological experiments. So, Šárka, the floor is yours.
Thank you. Hello. I'm glad that I can have my presentation here at UFAL, and I can even convey the atmosphere of UFAL. So the lecture hall S1 is as cold as usually in this time, so we can see that at least there is some stability in these strange times there. So today I'm going to talk about, let us say, three clusters of thoughts. The first of them will be the coherence in general. That will be very general thoughts about coherence, because our team works on discourse relations for a long time and on implicit discourse relations, and we don't ask anymore so often about the meaning of coherence for us, and therefore I decided to concentrate a bit on this question. So this will be the start. Then I want to think of the violation of coherence, whether it is really bad for understanding of a text, or whether coherence is something that's not so much valued in a text. So is it necessary for text understanding or not? And then I will get to implicit discourse relations and into some observations made on text annotations and on psycholinguistic experiments about coherence and about our understanding of text if there are ellipses of discourse connectives in text, so if the relations are implicit and we have to reconstruct something there in the text. So my first questions, as I said, will be very general. I want to know whether text coherence is necessary at all. And if we think of text coherence, I would say that for the very beginning, we have to think of functions of text. So why do we listen to text or read text, and why do we produce text? Of course, the first aim is to pass over some information, to get some information, but there can be other functions of text which are parallel to Jakobson's functions of language, like self-expression and so on. Usually we want to influence some recipient, and for that we need to convey a meaning. So keep the topic of the information or structure the information. Structure the information we are conveying to the recipient. If I want to express myself, do I need a coherence in a text, or do I need some like sense in the text? I would say that it is still very useful to have some structure in a text. I am just like expressing to myself, for example, in this time in my kitchen when talking to myself, just to organize my thoughts. And if I want to get to some result, I really need some structure of my thoughts. So for that, coherence of the text and structure of the text is really necessary. Now, there is another feature of coherence in communication. Coherence is usually expected in a text. That means that as a recipient, I think or I assume that the speaker produces some text which is coherent, and therefore I interpret his text pro-coherently. So if there is some possible homonymy there, I will understand it in a coherent way, not in the incoherent one. And if I am a producer of a text, I want to make it coherent because it is appreciated. And we can sometimes even see that people like overproduce signals of coherence even if it is not needed and even if it is not functional. So we like overuse sometimes connectives and similar words. There are different language means of coherence, and they build whole subsystems in language. For example, it's reference to entities. How do I know who is you, who is me in certain contexts? It can be reference or the subsystem of reference to the communicative situation. So, for example, the interpretation of a tense, verbal tense in a text. If I read an old book and I know that the book was not written in my time, so what does the presence or present time there mean? I'm still able to understand it somehow. There is a certain internal structure of a text which is signaled in traditional ways. We are able to distinguish attribution of different spans of the text. That means that we are able to distinguish between our thoughts, our quotation of other people, our assumptions about possible thoughts of our people. So we are possible to distinguish between authors of our one text, our one speech. Another subsystem is the system of discourse relations. So what do we mean when we talk about discourse relations? Discourse relations are relations between certain text spans, and they usually have some semantics. We can see it in the example here in the presentation, the relation between two sentences. She was very nice. For example, she always helped her neighbors. We can feel that there is a some coherence relation between these two sentences, and this relation is a discourse relation. There are two discourse arguments. She was very nice, and the second sentence there. So, and this discourse relation, as every discourse relation, has two important features. So first of all, we know that there is the simple existence of a discourse relation there. So these two sentences are somehow connected. There is not a coherent whole between them. And second point, there is certain semantic feature of the relation there. So we know not only that these two sentences are connected, but we know that the second one expresses an example to the first one, for the example of being very nice. So here there is an analysis of this example. You can see that every discourse relation in our approach is binary, so it has two arguments. The first argument in this case is the first sentence, and the second one is the second sentence. In this case, the discourse relation is expressed with a discourse connective, for example, and this discourse connective helps us to understand the semantics of the discourse relation as instantiation. So generally, we can say that discourse relations have some discourse arguments. These relations have some semantics. The relation is usually expressed with discourse connective, or it can be expressed with other connective means too, or other discourse means too. But in some cases, it is possible to align the discourse connective. So in some contexts, we can say explicitly, he didn't come because he was ill with the connective because, or implicitly, he didn't come, he was ill. And we would probably still understand or reconstruct the meaning of the discourse relation as causal. So there is a general question here. How is it possible that we can reconstruct the meaning of the unexpressed connective? Or how is it possible that we are able to understand the meaning of the discourse relation here, that we don't understand it, for example, as a simple conjunction, or that we don't understand it, I don't know, as a condition or a specification or whatever? So now I would like to think a little bit about ellipses and reconstruction in language generally. So we know that language or ellipses are quite common in a language. It's due to language economy. We know it, for example, from Prodrop when subjects are unexpressed. We know this from answers where just the focus part is expressed in the answers. And you probably remember the bit artificial situation from our basic schools when we were asked to answer with the whole sentence, which was really very unnatural. So there is a natural ellipse there, usual. We are very used to other situations where communicative functions and intentions are not expressed. For example, if you come to Ufal, you will read here on the square the inscription Malostranské náměstí, Malostranské square. And this is exactly the ellipsis of the communicative function. Why is it said there? You could ask if you had no experience with such an inscription. And this is a simple informative table saying that the name of this place is Malostranské náměstí. But it doesn't mean, for example, this is Malostranské náměstí, therefore it's not allowed to come here. And it's you who has to know the communicative function of this inscription and the intention of the author who put it there. So I want to say that ellipses are really usual on many levels in the language, and that discourse is not untypical in this way. What is important for functional ellipses? If the ellipsis should be functional, we should be able to reconstruct successfully what was meant behind that. So functional ellipses are typical for information which is repeated, for example, for some information in the topic, or it is typical for repeated patterns, for example, syntactic patterns, or very generally, elements can be elided, which are reconstructed in some frequent or majority pattern. So if you don't have two or more possibilities of reconstruction which are equivalent, it will work then. On the other hand, of course, there can be other ellipses which are not functional and which would lead to wrong reconstruction, like ellipsis of an unknown information. Of course, this will cause a mistake in the coherence and in the text understanding, or ellipsis of some untypical pattern. We probably know this from our communication in a foreign language, which we don't know so exactly or so well, where many patterns are untypical for us. And if we hear an ellipsis there, we are not able to reconstruct it. And of course, this would be the case of homonymy with more possible reconstructions where you have to choose and you are not sure which choice would be the correct one. Now, if a text is not coherent, so for example, there is some wrong ellipsis there, that means that we as recipients lose the meaning of the text and we don't understand the intention of the text anymore. And now the question is whether this is bad or not. Of course, I am now talking about different functions of text. So in some situations, in basic prototypical situations, it's bad. On the other hand, of course, there are situations where it is just enough that you, for example, hear somebody's voice and it's not so important that you don't understand it at all or that the sense was somehow interrupted. An example would be like, I don't know, a parent reading some text to his child to make him sleep. But generally, when we think of the basic functions of a text, the violation of the coherence violates the assumption of the meaning and the assumption of intention at the text, and therefore it leads to unfulfilled expectation of the recipient of the text. So now I'm moving to reconstruction of implicit discourse relations. There are some general questions there connected with coherence. So the first of them is, are there contexts where an implicit version of a discourse relation is insufficient? So, I mean, are there contexts where we need really explicit discourse relation with a discourse connective? or under which conditions are implicit discourse relations reconstructible? Another question is, are there discourse relations with specific semantics which must be expressed explicitly because it would be too hard to deduce? This is an interesting question about the specificity of semantics. We can probably imagine a little bit that relations including negation can be more complex and more specific that, than relations without negation and so on. Then there are other questions like whether the whether implicit discourse relation do violate text coherence in some contexts, and whether there is there are different levels of violation of coherence at different implicit discourse relations. So what is the aim of these considerations? This is important because it shouldn't be just the tradition that we are working on implicit discourse relations, but we should really know why we are working on that. And I would say that there is one very deep thought behind that, and this is the idea of clarification language exactness. We should not assume that language or natural language is totally exact. It's not necessary. And I'm coming back to those two features of discourse relation I spoke about at the beginning. I said that the first feature is the whole is the pure existence of the feature, and the second one is semantics. Maybe we don't always need semantics of discourse relation. So this is just one detail connected with this general thought I'm talking about now. So this could be an important feature of language for a deep semantic description of it. Another thought is, or another aim could be identification of discourse relations, which should be marked explicitly in natural language processing, like summarization or automatic translation. We know that during translation, the process of translation, some discourse relation can be implicitated very well, and it doesn't hurt the coherence or the understanding of the target text at all. But on the other hand, this doesn't happen always. So sometimes implicitation can mean a violation of coherence, of text coherence. And the last aim could be an identification of discourse relations by which a discourse connective can be successfully replaced by other language means. So to answer these general questions, we used two research methods, annotation of existing texts and psycholinguistic experiments with artificial texts. Now I'm proceeding to the annotation, and the question is here, which discourse relations are rather explicit and which are rather implicit? So this is a simple descriptive task. To answer this question, we created a corpus, enriched discourse annotation of Prague discourse tree bank subset. And this with my colleagues, Jiří Mírovský and Pavlína Sinková. And this corpus consists of 2,600 sentences, and it contains 100 documents coming from Czech journalistic texts from the 90s of the previous century. We have chosen texts from the Prague dependency tree bank so that they cover different text genres. We must admit that the Prague dependency tree bank contains journalistic texts only. So it's not like representative for the whole text types we have in Czech language, but on the other hand, we tried to balance this disadvantage in this way, like building a corpus containing different text genres, which are built on different stylistic factors like information, argumentation, persuasion, and so on. The annotation scenario followed Pandiscus tree bank, as well as the annotation on the tectogrammatic level of the Prague dependency tree bank. And it's important to say what was exactly annotated in this IDA corpus, because sometimes it's difficult to discern what is an implicit discourse relation. I mean, it's easy to find an explicit discourse relation because it's marked by the discourse connective, but implicit discourse relation, could you say that it's marked by the absence of a discourse connective? There are many places in a text where there is no discourse connective, like, for example, the border between a title and the text, or between the text and the name of the author. So we had to annotate many different phenomena in the text in order to discern real, proper, implicit discourse connectives from other cases. So we annotated, for example, relations between questions and answers, and entity-based relations, and all these authors, locations, headings, and so on. So at the very end, we marked all the connections between discourse arguments with some label, and we could present text as a continuous chain of discourse arguments. So what are features of an implicit discourse relation in our corpus? We annotated intra and inter-sentential relations. So, for example, if a conjunction is expressed within a complex sentence or between two isolated sentences, both these cases were annotated in the corpus. Discourse arguments of implicit discourse relations can be distant. They can even be located in different paragraphs. And at the same time, they can be very complex. So, for example, a whole paragraph can serve as a discourse argument, or just a part of a paragraph. And on the other hand, it can be smaller than a whole sentence. It can be just a clause, main clause or dependent clause. And the argument of implicit discourse relation even doesn't need to be a verbal phrase if it is an isolated nominal phrase or nonverbal sentence. We annotated and inserted discourse connective too in order to show how annotators understood the implicit relation, because sometimes there are like two interpretations of the relation. We can just imagine the example we had there at the beginning. She was very nice. She gave, she gave presents, or she helped. She always helped to her neighbors. Well, we could imagine that this is an instantiation if we insert, for example, there. But on the other hand, it could be a kind of causal relation, because you could insert because there too. She was very nice because she always helped her neighbors. So it's important to see how annotators understood implicit discourse relations. As I said at the beginning, discourse relations can have different semantics. So this is the set of discourse relations we used in our annotation. Now, the relations are concentrated or organized in four larger groups: the group of temporal relations, contrastive relations, expansion, and contingency. Yes, and now we are coming to the results of the annotations. So here we can see that in general there is a really big difference between intrasentential and intersentential relations there. So this really matters a lot. You can see that just looking there, that within intrasentential relations, it's usual to express discourse relations explicitly, whereas in intersentential relations, the implicitness is much, much more common, and this difference is really significant. So this is the first difference. The second is that the Ordering of relations in intrasentential structures and intersentential structure is different too. So top 10 is table is different for both types of structures. We can see it here. In the table, you can see top 10 semantic types, and the red ones are relations which don't occur in the other group at all, or not at all, in the top 10. Yeah. I'm sorry, I have problems a bit because I don't see all my pictures. Okay. Yes. So now let us see which discourse relations are explicit and which are implicit in intersentential structures. So I wanted to, I said before that intersentential relations are rather implicit, but I still want to see, well, how is it exactly? Because it doesn't mean that all of them are really implicit. So in this graph, always the whole of one relation means 100%. For example, all the occurrences of conjunctions are 100%. And now we can see how many percent of this 100 is explicit at conjunction and how many is implicit usually. So you can see that the majority of semantic types of discourse relations are implicit within these structures. It's interesting to see that even relations from one general group, like temporal relations, do differ here. That, for example, some temporal relations are rather explicit, whereas the others are rather implicit. Now, let us just remember the form of this graph and let us compare it with intrasentential structures. So here you can see that it's much more often explicit, as we saw. And even that the distribution of explicitness and implicitness at single relations differ between intrasentential and intersentential structures. So what are the results of the annotation? Well, we were surprised that almost all semantic types of discourse relations can be implicit and that the range of implicit discourse relations is so broad. At the very beginning, we thought that, for example, implicit relations will be just relations of conjunction or maybe a reason, but we really did not expect that, for example, concession can be, well, expressed implicitly. As we said, the implicitness and explicitness is depending from the structure, from the sentential structure. We can see that some relations have a strong tendency towards explicitness, so that the semantics of the discourse relation is important. For example, disjunctive, alternative, or condition. But, and that's surprising again, the others can be typically implicit, like within the general group of expansion, which means equivalence, specification, generalization, or instantiation. I'm just talking about surprises, but we were again surprised that the frequency of occurrences does not influence the explicitness or implicitness of a certain relation. So there was such an assumption that if the relation is frequent and common, it can be rather implicit, or it would be rather implicit, but it's not true. So we can see that conjunction is often implicit and gradation has the same distribution of explicitness and implicitness as conjunction, but gradation is very rare in our data. Another factor which could influence explicitness and implicitness of discourse relations could be the specificity of its of semantics of the relation. And again, there was an assumption that if the semantics is specific, the relation would be rather expressed. but this holds just for some of the relations, for example, purpose. On the other hand, as I said before, the relations from the group F expansion can be pretty specific, but still they are not expressed, and it's quite usual. So now we are getting to psycholinguistic experiments with artificial texts. We could see in our data, in our annotation, that explicitness and implicitness is not distributed equally. And I am coming back to the questions from the beginning of my talk when I asked whether there are relations where implicitness would impede the coherence. And on the other hand, whether there are relations where implicitness and or explicitness are not important for understanding text. Well, these questions could not be answered so well within annotations because there are existing texts there and they are usually well coherent. So in order to see violation of coherence, we need to have some artificial texts which are, as we suppose, in some direction really bad. So in our psycholinguistic experiments, we used texts with or without discourse connectives, and we wanted to compare which texts are easier for understanding. And here I must say that this was our first experience with psycholinguistic experiments and first experience with psycholinguistic experiments on discourse in Czech too. So it's important to remember that we are like making very rough picture, the very first rough picture of understanding discourse in Czech. And therefore, our questions may look very primitive, but we cannot start from a different point of view. So these experiments are carried out with in cooperation with Philip Smolík from the Labels Laboratory. So thank him for his great help. Now, we have chosen four discourse relations from the previous whole set of the annotations for the experiment. Two of them were from the group of contrastive relations. It was the confrontation and concession. And two were temporal. It was the synchrony and asynchrony or precedent succession. We are coming back to the graph from the results of the annotation. So here you can see the position of these four relations in the annotation. We have chosen two pairs, which in every pair there is one member which is more explicit than the other one, but on the other hand these relations don't come from like extreme positions of the graph. So we didn't want to have a verification of something that was obvious before. We wanted to see something that's a bit doubtful there. So this is the comparison of concession and confrontation on the one hand and synchrony and precedent succession on the second hand. Now I'm coming back to the distribution of temporal and of these temporal and contrastive relations in our annotation. We have quite low numbers here because we limited now that the occurrences to intersentential relations only, because in the experiment we really wanted to be very strict in order to have all the items equal or comparable. So we concentrated on intersentential relations only. So this is like the fraction of the corpus annotation, which is equivalent to our experimental data. So, and what were our questions? We wanted to verificate the different tendency towards explicitness and implicitness in one semantic group of relations. And as I said, we have taken the relations with non-extreme distributions of explicitness. Now, I will very shortly explain what do these terms mean, like synchrony and precedence succession and so on. So synchrony is a relation between two discourse arguments, which are happening at the same time. They are typically expressed with discourse connectives mezi tím, zatímco, or současně. I would say that the asynchrony or precedence succession is clear. It's usually expressed with connectives like dříve než, poté, and so on. Concession is a very well-known notion too. It's important to say that we understand concession as not only the relation between discourse arguments with connectives like ačkoliv, but, or i kdyby, but also with discourse arguments like přesto a přece, so in English, though. And confrontation is a relation of opposition which compares two entities like v Řecku and ve Skandinávii and assign to these entities different features like v Řecku je teplo, ve Skandinávii je zima. So there is a typical contrastive relation in the course of topic focus articulation there in the relation of confrontation. Sometimes discourse connectives typical for synchrony are used in confrontational relations, but we can still understand that there is a difference in meaning there. So, now, what about the method? We use the method of self-paced reading to see the accessibility or the intelligibility of the texts with the respondents. And this means that every respondent got on computer the text, which appeared in single words whenever the respondent pressed a button. So he or she had to press a button in order to be able to read the text. And after every push of the button, the time was measured. So we could see which words were read more quickly and which were slower. And there is the assumption that if it was slower, it was because there are some difficulties there in the text. We had from 50 to 60 respondents for each experiment. Yes, the hypothesis is that if this is the hypothesis about the method again, if the reaction time is shorter, then the text is more understandable. And we think that explicit discourse relations are easier for understanding than implicit ones, because you have to take some time at an implicit ones to make the reconstruction. Therefore, we thought, or the assumption was, that the reaction time will be shorter with explicit discourse relations. We had sets of items for each relations for each relation, consisting of 20 items, like 20 test items, and of course there were then fillers there too, in order not to show what the experiment was about. It was important for us that the respondents didn't know exactly about the aim of the experiment, and they were not asked in any meta language or so about their understanding of the text. They had just to read the text and then to answer a question. And this was just a check question which should show whether they really understand what they read and whether they don't push only the button in order to be very fast at the end of the experiment. So after every item, there was a check question, and they had to answer like yes or no. In every item, there were four sentences where the discourse relation is in the middle of the item. So the discourse relation is expressed with two discourse arguments, two sentences, because it is an inter-sentential discourse relation. So in the sentence number two, there was the first discourse argument. In the sentence number three, it was the second one, which was either with or without a discourse connective, if the relation was implicit. And around these discourse arguments, there were some context sentences, one before and one after that. It was important because there are some specific phenomena which occur at the beginning of reading a text and at the end of reading a text, and we wanted to eliminate them. We have chosen items with one discourse connective only in at each discourse relation. So for confrontation it was za to, for concession přesto, then mezi tím and potom, because we wanted to eliminate the possibility that the understanding of different discourse connective can somehow influence the reading. Yes. So here you can see the structure of an item, an experiment item for concession. There is the structure of the second and third sentence written there above. Dlouho chtěl nové kolo consists of a prodrop subject, which is personal and singular, on, this is Milan, who was mentioned in the first sentence, then temporal or local settings, dlouho, predicative verb, transitive, chtěl, adjective nové, and object kolo. And then in the second discourse argument, in the sentence number three, there is the discourse connective, which could be elided in implicit discourse relations, přesto, nakonec, temporal or local setting, dostal, again, predicate verb, školní, adjective, and atlas object. So this was the fixed structure for all the items of concession in the experiment. Then you can see the Czech question there too and the answer. Yes, and we could, of course, then see even the answers of the respondents, which were not so important for the experiment itself, but we still could see whether, for example, they were too, I would say, not concentrated, or whether they had a lot of mistakes there, or whether they were always right, and then we could see that they probably think of what they are reading. So this is the structure of confrontation, which is again repeated in every item. V soukromí vždy jednal odvážně, za to na veřejnosti často působil nesměle. So you can see that there are the same subjects there in these two sentences which are not expressed within the discourse relation. Now, there is a local or temporal setting at the beginning of the first argument, then another one of not local. It's the first contrastive part, soukromí, and at the beginning of the second sentence, or sentence number three, there is the second contrastive part, na veřejnosti. And then the structure is parallel. There is temporal or local setting there, the verb, and an adverb. Within synchrony, there were sentences with different subjects there. So in the first argument, it's Tereska, in the second one, Hátka. And here we had a non-intransitive verb in the second sentence, just to make it more colorful. So, but it was again in every item of synchrony. So Tereska is the subject, then we have a transitive verb there, an object, and some prepositional phrase, which had local meaning. In the second sentence, there is the connective, location, the verb, and the subject. Typically, the meaning of the second or the third sentence of the second argument was the introduction of a new element to a scene, because usually the subject was there in the focus of the sentence. And the last one is precedent succession, with the pair velitel prolistoval noviny na pohovce, potom na dveře zaklepal nováček. So again, you can see that this is similar to the example in synchrony, or in the relation of synchrony. There is a difference there in the aspect of the verb. So here every verb was perfective, whereas in the last examples of synchrony, verbs were imperfective. And yes, we had some fillers which were slightly similar to those examples, and they had to simply to distract the attention of the respondents. So now we are getting to the results of the experiments. The results were evaluated with mixed regression models, where the significance of the relations between the reading time and the present of the discourse connective was evaluated. The features of single respondents and items were taken into account. This means that every respondent reads in his own temp, and it should be somehow got into taken into account in the processing of the results. And similarly, every item is, or the item are not com items are not comparable in the difficulty for understanding. So if it is a long word, it's read longer time than a short word. Some extraordinary observations were excluded, and some packages or LME4 and LMER test packages were used in the R system to evaluate the results there. So now we are getting to the first result of confrontation. Here you can see in the graph the differences between explicit and implicit realization of confrontation. There are two significant differences here. The first is at the second position of the explicit discourse relation na veřejnosti, and the second one is nesměle at the end of the sentence. And as we said before, we wanted to concentrate specifically at the end of the second sentence or the second argument, that means the third sentence in the experiment, because we think that the understanding of the discourse relation is somehow completed at the end of the whole discourse relation. So the last position is very important for us, and here we can really see that implicit discourse relation is significantly slower here at this very point. But when getting back to the start of the sentence, this is general or common for all the results we have for all four relations. The first element in a sentence is usually read or understood not so fast, because you need to concentrate on that. And here the difference is important between what is the first part in the sentence. So whereas in the explicit relation it's the word za to, and the second word na veřejnosti is already the second one, and therefore you don't concentrate so much on that because of being first. Like, there is not the discourse there anymore. In implicit discourse relation, you simply stop at the phrase na veřejnosti because it's the phrase, first phrase in the sentence. So we simply put aside these results from the beginning of sentences because this is repeated in every item we find. And this is not caused by the explicitness or implicitness of the discourse relation. There is another difference there. You can see that the time of reading the first word in explicit sentence za to and the first word in implicit sentence na veřejnosti differs too. And we would say that the reading of discourse connective is shorter because it's somehow more obvious or more typical for discourse connectives to be at the beginning of a sentence, and they come from a closed set of elements, and therefore they are simple, more simple for processing in reading the text. Whereas na veřejnosti comes from very open set of any phrase which can appear there in the beginning of the sentence, and therefore you need more time to process it. So this phenomenon, this different speed at the start of a sentence, will be seen at every graph we have here, but we will not stop at it anymore. So we could see that within confrontation relations, explicit discourse relations are processed, or explicit sentences are processed faster than implicit. Here you can see some numbers with the significance at the last position. Now we are getting to concession, and the results here are similar to confrontation. The presence of a discourse connective significantly facilitates the understanding of the relation, although it's not so strong as at confrontation. So you can again see here a difference at the end of the sentence, the difference in the speed of reading or understanding the last word, atlas, but this difference is not so large anymore. So here is the significance. In the fifth position, you can see that it's much lower than it was at confrontation. We are getting to temporal relations now, and the results for temporal relations are different. So in both sentences we can see, or in both relations, we can see that the presence or absence of a discourse connective does not affect the speed of reading synchrony relations. So here in the graph, we can see that the speed of the reading of the last verse is almost the same. It almost doesn't differ. And the significance of the difference is really microscopic, so we cannot say that it differs significantly at all. The same result holds for precedence and succession. So in the graph here, again, the last position is read with the same speed in both conditions, like, I mean, explicit condition and implicit condition. Yes. So now, as for the results of the experiment, we could see that for temporal relations, the presence of a discourse connective does not affect the intelligibility of the discourse relation. This is interesting because, well, we would assume that it would help a little, at least a little bit, if you like use explicit discourse connectives there. On the other hand, maybe it would be even possible that in some contexts it would be it wouldn't help to use discourse connectives, because it would mean that you have to concentrate somehow unnaturally on the relation and it would distract your attention. This did not happen here at temporal relations. So there is, like, discourse connectives don't matter at temporal relations at all. Within the group of contrastive relations, we could see that the presence of a discourse connective significantly accelerates reading of the last segment, and it really increases the intelligibility of the discourse relation. So now we compared the results of both methods, and again, we are getting back to more general questions, like whether the implicit discourse relations can be used in any context, and what about the violation of text coherence? So is it verse with some relations or not? So in this table, we are comparing the results of the annotation and of the psycholinguistic experiments. And we can see that for synchrony, there is no difference between implicit and explicit discourse relations there, and the explicitness doesn't help to understand the discourse relation better, which was proved in the psycholinguistic experiment. Within asynchrony, again, the explicitness is not important for understanding the relation. Within confrontation, we have opposite results in the annotation and in the psycholinguistic experiments. So In the annotation, the confrontation is typically implicit, whereas in psycholinguistic experiment, it was hard to understand the confrontation if it was implicit. So we will have to stop a little bit at this point and try to explain it. And the last point is concession. There is again a slight discrepancy there, because we can see that within the annotation, it can be either implicit or explicit, whereas in the experiment it is significantly explicit. But we must say that the significance here is weaker than at the confrontation. So we are getting now to the confrontation, because this is an interesting point of the comparison of these both methods. We could see that within the annotation, the confrontation is rather implicit, whereas in the experiments, the implicitness impedes the understanding of the relation. So we have some possible explanations for this phenomenon. The first of them is that in the annotation, we have broader approach to confrontation. We have different discourse connectors there, different cases of confrontation. And in the experiment, we could concentrate on one discourse connective only and on one typical structure. On the other hand, we must admit that in the annotation, in the corpus, there are specific language data there, and that the size of the corpus is really limited, and therefore, yes, we can get to different results with different data. But there is another thought which could explain this difference between these two methods. In the corpus data, we have always a larger context than just one sentence before, as in the experiment. And maybe that the confrontation can be understood from this larger context, that we have some basic idea of the situation, and therefore we can understand it better, even if it is implicit. And I have even such a suspicion that, but I haven't looked into the data yet, that confrontation doesn't occur, for example, at beginnings of text, that this previous context is really needed, or that is not present, for example, in first paragraphs on text, that it's something like intratextual relation. And this is interesting. We haven't thought yet about the distribution of discourse relations in the structure of text, like at the beginning of texts or at the conclusion of texts. So here we must admit that the context and the small texts in the experiments are really artificial. It's not natural reading, and it's not natural communicative situation. I'm adding some very short remarks again. I will be very grateful for your any comments on these experiments, because as I said before, these were first experimental data, or these are first experimental data on the text structure in Czech, on discourse structure, as far as I know. For us, it was very interesting to switch from the methodology of the corpus linguistic to psycholinguistic. And I must admit that it was difficult too, because we are used from corpus linguistics to annotate everything and to describe every phenomenon we meet. And so we get full descriptions of whole levels there. And then when we come to psycholinguistic laboratory, they tell us we can verify just a really very small part of that, what we have described. It's like 1 square millimeter or something like that. So you take just one structure with just one discourse connective and just one meaning. And this is really interesting. So how should this be compared, and which kind of results can be deduced from the comparison? Of course, we can be very inspired by many many scientists from abroad, like Ted Sanders, Hannah Rode, Jed Hook, or Barbora Scarabello. So I'm coming to the final conclusion. We can see that in some positions, implicitation, for example, in a translation, can hinder text understanding significantly. Within intersentential relations in Czech, this applies for concession and confrontation. And for confrontation, better understanding of an implicit relation may be dependent from a sufficient large preceding context. For temporal relations, explicitness neither improves nor aggravates the intelligibility of the relation semantics. So thank you for your attention. And I would like to thank to all grants supporting me. And I would like to thank to people supporting our team and me during the research. So these are research team members, Jiří Mírovský, Filip Smolík, Pavlína Jínová and Lucie Poláková. Then our foreign colleagues, Bonnie Weber, Jed Hug and Barbora Škarabela. I'm very grateful for the friendly atmosphere at the Institute of Formal and Applied Linguistics. And I would like to express a deep gratefulness to Professor Eva Hajčová for the inspiration and long-lasting support of our research.
Well,